We'll now call Daniel Foster, D.O. versus Mary Richardson. Tatum.
May it please the court. This is a Section 74.351 proceeding. This court is well aware of these proceedings. It has dealt with the law in this area since the statute was enacted and has made a good bit of it. So I'm going to leave the discussion of the legal precedent to the briefs and focus the court's attention on what really the important part of this, which is the facts. The sequence of events that got us to this day and this point. The injury occurred on December 27, 2006. Ms. Richardson was seen by Dr. Otero on January 22, 2007. Roughly a month later. Dr. Otero prescribed that she prescribed knee surgery, which was done on February the 15th, 2007, 3 weeks or so later. She saw Dr. Foster, my client, on June 21, 2007, 4 months after the knee surgery. She consulted an unnamed orthopedic surgeon on July 27 and had a reduction on what was determined to have been a broken ankle roughly 2 or 3 weeks after that. The first problem with the report, with Dr. Drasner's report, that I'd like to direct the court's attention to is the complete failure to distinguish between Drs. Foster and Otero in terms of the alleged standard of care, the alleged breaches of the standard of care, and the alleged causation, element of causation. Even though those two physicians saw this patient 4 months apart under very different circumstances, Dr. Drasner continually refers to the two of them as having breached certain standards of care. And I want to point out one interesting problem with that. In the portion of the record, and I'm going to direct the court's attention to the clerk's record at page 41, where the paragraph starting the standard of care applicable to both Dr. Otero and Dr. Foster begins, it discusses the standard of care for a physician examining a patient's leg injury to perform a thorough orthopedic examination, which is vague and which actually should have been explained more in depth, and I'll get to that in a minute, including the knee, ankle, foot, and to detail findings of the examination. Finally, when it finally gets down to the standard of care for treatment, Dr. Drasner opines, quote, it is the standard of care to undertake a trial of conservative care before proceeding to surgery unless there is a distinct fracture, complete tear, or severe internal derangement. That confuses the two physicians in two different ways. First of all, it's unclear from that statement about the standard of care whether whether Dr. Drasner is referring to a knee injury or the ankle injury, number one. And number two, the standard of care described as undertaking a trial of conservative care before proceeding to surgery is exactly what Dr. Foster did. Dr. Foster didn't engage in immediate surgery. The reason he didn't is because he didn't determine that there was a break. But the fact of the matter is, it was conservative care. Now, that by itself totally confuses the standard as it's applied to Drs. Otero and Foster, which are the two defendants in this case. The second problem, and the problem that I want to focus the court's attention on, is the element of causation. Once again, we have two physicians who have been sued, two physicians who consulted with the patient 4 months apart. Dr. Otero, the first consult, was aware of a history of knee problems and saw the patient 1 month after the injury occurred that the patient's complaining about. Dr. Foster saw the patient 4 months later with indeterminate complaints of leg pain and a history of a knee surgery on that leg. There are totally different circumstances that the physicians had to deal with this patient. And the problem with the causation element here is that it doesn't, Dr. Drasner does not connect up Dr. Foster's treatment with the ultimate problem that Mrs. Richardson is suing over. That is, disabilities relating to the problems resulting from the ankle reduction surgery that occurred several months later. In order for Dr. Foster to be responsible for the results of that surgery, which, according to the as pleaded, and I'll direct the court's attention to the page 4 of the clerk's record, which is in which the pleading states that due to the length of time from injury to diagnosis, it was necessary to re-break the partially healed ankle and insert metal hardware. The report makes the same conclusion, and the part of the pleading is for damages resulting from the disability that resulted from that surgery. Well, in order for there to be for causation to apply to Dr. Foster's examination, there had to be an opinion that had Dr. Foster identified the problem 1 month before the physician who ultimately did identify it did so, then the patient would not have needed the surgery. There is, because the surgery would have been made unnecessary had the diagnosis been made a month earlier. That is the causation element that's missing here. The report doesn't say that Richardson would have avoided surgery and the results of that surgery had Foster seen the fracture when she was in his care in June of 2007. The report does not say that the described impairment would have been avoided had Foster done the surgery 1 month earlier than it was actually performed, or 6 weeks earlier than it was actually performed.
But isn't that a problem really with, I guess, the quantity of causation and maybe apportionment of damages?
Well, Your Honor, I think the problem is that in a medical context, I think it's also almost axiomatic. As the time passes, bones heal, conditions change. But at some point, you reach a stasis point beyond which there isn't going to be any more change. And I don't see anything in here that does attribute the results of the surgery only to the one-month delay between when Dr. Foster saw Ms. Richardson and when the subsequent treating physician saw Ms. Richardson. There has to be we've cited a case in our brief, the Jones case from the San Antonio Court of Appeals that addresses this. There has to be a baseline drawn. If there's negligence alleged of two people who supposedly did the same thing but at different times, there has to be a baseline drawn from which the alleged negligence of the second treating physician can be measured, and the results of that negligence can be measured. And there's no baseline here. In the case that I'm referring to, it's Jones. Let's see, Jones versus King at page 7 of our brief in San Antonio, out of the San Antonio Court of Appeals, and it talks about that. The facts are somewhat similar. There was a treatment that caused some pain and pain that increased apparently over time between, and two different physicians saw the patient. The court decided that the report was deficient as to both of them because, and this language is quoted in our brief, there has to be for causation to be attributed to the second physician, there has to be a baseline from which the patient's condition worsened. So the causation problem with Dr. Drasner's report, I think, is very significant. There is nothing in the record that demonstrates or even opines that Dr. Foster's failure to diagnose the break when he saw Mrs. Richardson changed the need for surgery, and the causal link is still missing. All of the disability that she's claiming arises from the need for surgery to fix the ankle, and not one comment attributes the need for the surgery to the time between Dr. Foster's exam and when Dr. Drasner or someone saw Mrs. Richardson. The second problem, or the third problem actually, with the report is that it is unclear from the contents of it that Dr. Drasner is competent to testify about the standard of care applicable to an orthopedic surgeon who is seeing a patient on consult at a point in time 6 months after an injury has occurred and with intervening surgeries and treatment. What Dr. Foster saw was a patient with, as I said, indeterminate pain and a knee surgery on the same leg. The treatment was conservative. I think there's nothing in the record, as I said, that indicates that anything beyond the date that Dr. Foster saw Mrs. Richardson exacerbated the situation that existed when he did see her. And all of that, none of that is discussed by Dr. Drasner, whose specialty is rehab medicine and has nothing to do with surgery and surgical treatment. I think the brief is pretty thorough on that point. So I believe that this opinion really is deficient in the way stated. I don't know how else to say it. I think what we have here is a disconnect between two different physicians. I think that the report should not have lumped them both together, and it does, and that's a deficiency. The report didn't address causation. That's a deficiency. And the deficiencies are such that it doesn't appear to be a good faith effort. I don't believe that there should be a basis for remanding this case for a second try. And for those reasons, I think that the court's decision of the court below should be reversed. I'll give you some time back.
Thank you, Mr. Tatum.
Thank you.
Ms. Mayor?
May it please the court. I think that the last thing that appellant's counsel was arguing was that regarding treatment or rehabilitation, but we don't even get to that issue if the doctors fail to diagnose the problem. And in this case, it was diagnosing a fractured fibula. And the same thing I did in my brief, I'd like to start off with Dr. Drasner's qualifications. And I think under the remedies code, when it talks about how an expert is qualified, without a doubt, Dr. Drasner is qualified to diagnose these orthopedic injuries. In fact, he's mm-hmm. even, in the case of Dr. Foster, where he diagnosed complex regional pain syndrome, Dr. Drasner has lectured and taught on those areas. But getting back to the evaluation of these and diagnosing, treating, or diagnosing injured plaintiffs, Dr. Drasner sets out not only in his CV, but he says that he has examined, evaluated, diagnosed, and treated injured patients, primarily those who have suffered from orthopedic injuries. And that's what he does actually for a living. This is what he considered his specialty. He's been doing it over 20 years and has 20,000 patients that with orthopedic injuries that he's treated, and he said he's probably had over several hundred thousand that he's diagnosed in after physical examination. Getting back to the remedies code, Dr. Drasner, of course, is a practicing physician. He knows the accepted standard of care. This is what, as I said in his report, he says this is what he does on a daily basis, and he's the director of an agency where that's all they do. And he's qualified by his training and experience to offer an opinion on the standard of care. Going back to the actual, I think Dr. Foster himself, as far as what he did, Dr. Foster, when he examined Ms. Mary Richardson, noticed several different things like the atrophy of the lower calf, the superficial tenderness to palpitation. And Dr. Drasner indicates in his report that she was complaining about her foot and her ankle area. So, and this is both to Dr. Otero and also to Dr. Foster. So as Dr. Drasner indicated, these complaints went ignored. And so Foster diagnosed Ms. Richardson as having complex regional pain syndrome, and then he referred her for physical therapy. So as far as what the physical therapy did, or he ordered physical therapy, what that did as far as her condition is another matter. But one thing I wanted to call to the attention of the court that I think is something to do with, I had not noticed this before when I originally wrote the brief and was commenting or responding to the causation element. As far as the causation, and it seems like the appellant's argument is basically there's a period of time, and as Justice Livingston pointed out, I believe the same thing. It's apportionment of damages, and it's a responsibility, and what what each doctor did. But he's talking about the time frame, and that's what his big emphasis is. And he's saying that somehow Dr. Drasner should have been omniscient, and he should have known that when the bone healed and should have given an opinion as to if it would have healed by the time that Dr. Foster saw her and what the, what would be the status of Mary Richardson if, in fact, it had not healed at the time that Dr. Foster saw her, or if it already had healed, would there be any damages? And, as far as talking about speculation, he's talking about as far as a doctor trying to determine when a bone healed. And actually that would, I think, any orthopedic surgeon would say that would be dependent upon, the individual themselves and what activities they were doing. But what I wanted to call to the attention of the court is on the clerk's record on page 22, and this is on Dr. Drasner's report, and it goes from the clerk's record, page 19 to 22. And the very last sentence is, as a result, it is my opinion that Ms. Richardson will suffer from impairments that could have been prevented had her injury been properly and timely diagnosed and treated before the fracture. And this is the place where I'd like the court to look. He crossed out, had healed incorrectly, and he put failed to heal, moved to non-union, and required further exhaustive care. So what I'm reading from the report of Dr. Drasner is at the time that Mary Richardson was seeing Dr. Foster, he's saying that it had not healed, and that's why they had to have surgery to put in plates and pins and so forth. And it had moved to non-union. As far as now, the speculation would be, or the issue would be, and this is what appellant would argue, well, when did the non-union occur? And I think when we get to that point, Your Honors, I know that one of the things that the case that he cites, Jones, is talking about speculation and the fact that this is a morphine pump that was implanted. And the doctor is saying that, it caused meningitis and diabetes. And he doesn't explain how that connect the two. There's a vast difference between the Jones case and the case that's before this court. And Judge Walker, in one of her opinions that I've cited in our brief, basically she acknowledges that, in a medical malpractice case, you can have there can be more than one proximate cause, and there can be concurrent causes. And in this particular case, both of the doctors were orthopedic doctors, and both of the doctors did the same thing as far as evaluating her and doing a physical examination. But both doctors failed to follow the standard of care for examining a patient for an orthopedic injury.
Counselor, can I interrupt you there? Because that's the part of this report that I'm having the most difficulty with, is discerning what is the standard of care. The report states that it is to complete orthopedic examination, to perform objective diagnostic test, and to undertake a trial of conservative care. But I don't know what a complete orthopedic examination, objective diagnostic test, and a trial of conservative care is from reading this report.
Well, I think he's addressing both of the doctors, and I think as far as the knee surgery, that has nothing to do with this case as far as the conservative care there. I don't think if you don't diagnose the injury, in this case, you know, the broken or the fractured fibula, you don't even get to conservative care. And so I don't think that is the issue. Here's what I gleaned from his report, and it applies to both doctors, but Dr. Foster in particular, since this is, you know, his case, perform a thorough orthopedic examination to determine the nature and extent of the injury, and he goes in to say how you do that. You perform a full range of motion testing to the full leg, and including the knee and ankle and foot, and that wasn't done.
Well, is that okay? And I recognize that that's the only specific standard that is articulated in the report that I can tell, is just doing a range of motion test.
Well, no, Your Honor. I think he said also that as far as the person's complaints, for example, in this case, to observe the symptoms. For example, he specifically says Dr. Foster recognized the atrophy of her calf and also the swelling and the contusions around her ankle area. Yet he did nothing. There wasn't even the objective findings he's speaking about were X-rays or an MRI. That was not performed. And, in fact, the only one that was performed was by Dr. Otero, and it was of her knee. So what he's saying is, basically, you've got to listen to the patient's complaints. And when she's complaining about the lower leg or the ankle area, you just begin to say, well, it's complex regional pain syndrome, and then, order her to physical therapy. He's saying that that's not a thorough physical examination. It didn't involve the ankle. And especially when she's complaining about that, and he sees and he reports himself findings that would indicate that something was wrong with the lower leg or the ankle area. So as far as, the objective findings, X-rays, MRIs, that wasn't done. The physical examination, the orthopedic examination he's talking about as far as the full range of motion testing, had something been done like the full range of motion testing pertaining to the ankle, you know, perhaps there would have been more enlightenment. But as it is, he palpitated that area and said it was sensitive to the touch.
So that's the standard of care that on which you rely is the full range of motion testing.
And the objective findings. And objective findings have to be through an MRI or an X-ray.
But there's no mention here of objective diagnostic tests, including an MRI or anything of that nature. So my problem with it is it just doesn't explain what is meant by those terms.
Well, the other thing, Your Honor, I think it does. I was looking for, you're reading one particular place, but I think it's...
Well, I was reading where he states the standard of care applicable to both doctors. That's where I'm reading.
Okay.
And then there's also referral for a second opinion. He states that as a standard of care as well.
Right, Your Honor. He says that without a complete orthopedic examination, which what I said is on page 20, he does go into more of that. It's actually throughout his report that he talks about it, not in one just particular place. But he does say, including a full range of motion and the obtainment of appropriate objective diagnostic tests, and those are X-rays and MRIs. But what he's saying, and one of the things that he's really complaining about with Dr. Foster, he ignored patients' complaints of calf pain and tenderness and he diagnosed her as having complex regional pain syndrome of the lower extremity, and referred her to physical or ordered her to physical therapy. So basically, as far as any kind of, and then he talks about what complex regional pain syndrome, what would be the hallmarks in diagnosing that, and he says there's nothing that he has in his records that indicate any of the documentation of the condition, the documents documents the condition. So so I believe that as far as the standard of care, definitely, you know, it was to, like I said, I don't know of what else a doctor could do after, you know, if he had performed a complete orthopedic examination of her lower leg, including her ankle area, which is what, you know, he's saying wasn't done. And he looked and listened to the patient's complaints of pain at the ankle area, and he looked at the swelling and the contusions or the you know the bruising of that area. You know, this should have alerted him that an X-ray or something, diagnostic an objective diagnostic test was indicated. Anyway, Your Honor, I believe that as far as the causation, as I said, the surgery applies to both. I mean, both of them failed to do the same thing. They both had the same standard of care. Dr. Drasner is well qualified to comment on the standard of care of diagnosing and examining patients for orthopedic injuries. That's what he does on a daily basis. And basically, they didn't do that, and as a result, surgery was required that wouldn't have been required, in his opinion, had it not had it been diagnosed earlier. But the thing is, he did say that it wasn't healed at the time that she had her surgery. So, in conclusion, I believe that as far as causation, as Justice Livingston and both Justice Walker has in one of her opinions brought up, that it. You know, the causation can be its or the responsibility attributed to each defendant in the case where they're doing the exact same thing, has the same standard of care, and they make the same breach of the standard of care. And the results themselves, this is something, as I said in my brief, is something to be apportioned by the jury as far as what the damages are attributable to each. And it would be really mere speculation for a doctor to try and opine that this portion of it would be results from Dr. Foster's negligence, and this portion results from Dr. Otero's negligence. When in fact, you know, both did the same thing and breached the standard of care, and as a result, she needed the surgery. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Counselor.
To respond to a couple of points. First of all, the argument that we make with regard to causation doesn't depend on speculation about when the bone healed or if it healed. And as counsel points out, there was a difference of opinion between someone in the in Dr. Drasner's report regarding whether a bone healed or not. She pointed the court's attention to the interlineation on the last page, which is the clerk's record, page 43. If the bone healed correctly, there was no causation attributable of the ultimate problem attributable to Dr. Foster. If the bone didn't heal, again, no additional. There's no causation attributable to Dr. Foster's failure to diagnose it. It was in the same condition before he saw her and after he saw her, and it was ultimately dealt with. But it wasn't exacerbated by anything that Dr. Foster did or didn't do. The court correctly points out the vague description of the standard of care, and again, I want to point the court's attention to the fact that if you read this thing one way, it appears that Dr. Foster did exactly what Dr. Drasner said he should have done, except for some kind of range of motion test. We don't know if there was anything else that was covered by or required by Dr. Drasner's view of the standard of care
Well, if range of motion testing is stated as a standard of care and that wasn't performed, then wouldn't that be enough?
Your Honor, I think
if he did all kinds of other things? I mean, the problem with the ankle was had to do with a limited or a restricted range of motion.
That was evident from the patient's initial comments to the physician, which were recorded, that she was, I mean, I don't think there's any dispute that she told Dr. Foster about her tenderness, the ankle pain, indeterminate lower leg swelling, and so forth. But there's nothing in this report that says that Dr. Foster's initial impression of that was below the standard of care, was negligent, or was it was in any other way deficient.
But the report does state, does it not, that he failed to do the range of motion testing?
It does state that. But
so if that's
it
one,
doesn't state.
Even if the other standards of care descriptions are vague, that one's not.
That one isn't, but it doesn't state specifically in the breach of the standard of care that but for that test, Dr. Foster would have discovered that it was a broken ankle. I'm reading from the breach of standard of care paragraph on page 42 of the clerk's record. Without a complete orthopedic examination, including full range of motion testing and the obtainment of appropriate objective diagnostic tests on Ms. Richardson's ankle and foot, an accurate diagnosis was not possible. It doesn't stay. I mean, that is an opinion from a physical therapist, but I don't believe that the report goes all the way to say that but for that test, everything else would not have happened.
I don't think the report has to state it in the same terms that you would have to prove it at trial, does it?
It does not.
The report have to have a but-for opinion in it?
Well, I think to satisfy a causation element, it needs to. I mean, it does. The report does have to address causation. I mean, and so at some point, there has to be a but-for opinion. It can be a tentative but-for opinion. It can be, it's subject to further discussion. But I think there has to be something.
I have another question. There isn't
anything in here with regard to Dr. Foster's care. Excuse me.
That's okay. I have another question for you. You know, we're getting so many of these appeals, and it seems like everyone has their own little twist or permutation. But, in your brief, you note that the criteria for a statutory expert report is that the written report by an expert that provides a fair summary of the expert's opinion as of the date of the report regarding the applicable standards of care, the manner in which the care rendered by the physician or healthcare provider failed to meet the standards, and then you have underlined, and the causal relationship between that failure and the injury, harm, or damages claimed. And it seems to be that part of your argument is that the damages claimed means the damages set forth in the report, which is that as a result, it is my opinion that Mrs. Richardson will suffer from impairments that could have been prevented by had her injury been properly and timely diagnosed, and then that interlineation. But I'm wondering if it means, it being the statute, that sentence means the causal relationship between that failure and the injury or harm or damages claimed in the petition.
Well, if I left that impression, Your Honor, that's my fault. The argument was intended and does include the damages that are claimed in the petition. The damages claimed are for future impairment, for pain and suffering, for the expenses involved in an unnecessary ankle reduction, and so forth. And I think
so
there
then couldn't the damages claim be pain and suffering for that month between when Dr. Foster saw Mrs. Richardson and when it was ultimately correctly discovered that she had this broken ankle?
That's the Jones case. And that's exactly what happened in that case. And the court addressed that and held that there needed to be, if you had one person doing something and then another person doing the same thing later, there has to be a baseline from which one could determine that the results of the second person's actions exacerbated something or made it worse. That's the made the pain and suffering more acute or something like that.
It
that
can't
is what
just
the
be
Jones
prolonged.
Case says. I'm sorry?
It can't just be prolonged?
According to the court in Jones, it can't. Now, this court might not agree with that analysis, but that's what the court in Jones basically said. And I think it's appropriate, in particularly in a situation like this, where, I mean, for example, if Dr. Foster had seen the patient and had said, "Look, I can't do anything about this. You need to go see a physical therapist." Sent her on, or it doesn't look like there's any problem here. Go see a physical therapist. Or it had somehow just declined to accept her for a course of treatment. Would that, and I know there's duty issues involved here, but would that, the 2 weeks between the time she saw him and the time she could get an appointment to see someone else, be attributable to his, what he did? That's the problem. And I think what we're talking about here is a period of time in which there is no evidence that there was any exacerbation of a pre-existing condition. There also is no evidence, and that's why this causation element is so important. If Dr. Foster had treated the patient like a subsequent treating physician did that did the surgery, would the disability have been any worse? If this had happened earlier, would the condition of her ankle been significantly different if this had happened any earlier? All of those things go into this causation analysis when you're dealing with serial medical treatments on a situation that changes over time, just by nature of the human body. But, I mean, anyway, that's far more than the court asked, and I apologize. But our briefing does address the actual pleaded for damages as well. I think the causation element is the same. That's the same problem.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Your time is way up.
And incidentally, I've been meaning to say this, and this reminds me of the old plea of privilege practice. I think the legislature's recreated that for all of us.
Thank you, Counselor. Time's up. We appreciate you both appearing here this morning to present your arguments. The case is submitted, and you're both excused. Thank you.